I also expected them to blame their homelessness on bad luck or on society and something outside of themselves. In fact, they tended to blame themselves, wrongly, in my opinion. I met people who were interesting and emotionally connected to me. I felt energized. Other days, I heard so much sadness and so much pain that I went home with a lump in my throat, and I wasn't sure I could make it out the next day.
You're listening to Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast where experts share experiences and the latest thinking on mental health and psychology. Here's your host, Gabe Howard.
Thanks for being here and listening, everyone. I'm your host, Gabe Howard. Calling in today, we have Robert L. Okun, MD. Dr. Okun is the recipient of the American Psychiatric Association's prestigious Human Rights Award and the author of Silent Voices, People with Mental Disorders on the Street, which is available now. Dr. Okun, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much for having me, Gabe.
I want to say, when I found out that in order to write your book, you spent 2 years on the streets meeting and talking with homeless individuals with mental illness, I immediately thought to myself, how exactly did that work? For example, did you sleep outside? How did you approach people? What was your process over those 2 years?
Well, it really began when I was walking to my car one night in San Francisco. It was raining, it was cold. And before I got into my car, I saw this little woman huddled up on the sidewalk, you know, trying to protect herself from the rain. And after I got home, I just couldn't forget her. And for the next 3 weeks, she kept coming into my mind. I couldn't imagine how she bore the stresses of being on the street night after night, day after day. You know, I decided to leave my office in the hospital and meet these people where they lived, basically on their turf rather than on mine. I wanted to get closer to these people who were homeless and at least putatively mentally ill, in order to hear from them about their lives directly and personally. I wanted to understand how they coped with their illnesses and the stresses of homelessness in jail, because many of them had been jailed. I wanted to know what they thought about as they pushed their carts down the street, what they did with so much empty time, how they managed at night. And I guess I wanted to know why they made some of the choices they did. I began to approach people on the street, and I asked them whether they would be willing to talk to me about their lives. And I have to say, before I talked to the first few people, I was really anxious that they would just blow me off and refused to talk to me, because I was just some dude on the street, you know, with a knapsack and none of the authority that I had in the hospital. I wasn't some doctor with a, you know, with a white coat. But I found the opposite. They seemed genuinely pleased that I was interested in their lives. You know, most of these people had been neglected as children, and they continued to feel invisible as people on the street. So I guess seeing that I was very interested in their lives meant a lot to them.
During our pre-interview emails for this episode, you shared something that really struck me, Dr. Okun. You shared, we think of homelessness as being, quote, caused by mental illness, unquote, but we never really delve deeper than that. We tend to see the ways in which these people, which you put in quotes, are different from us, but not the things that we have in common with them, and that this is the first step in the process of dehumanization that is ultimately ensures that more people are forced to the streets and stay there. Now, it really seems to me like you're indicating that homelessness is not in fact caused by mental illness, but it's rather caused by society and our policies.
Well, this is a complicated question, and homelessness, well, first of all, there are different subgroups of homeless people, and homeless mentally ill people represent just one of those categories. So other categories of people, you know, are not at all mentally ill, and they fall off into the street largely for financial reasons. But the people that I interviewed were largely mentally ill and homeless. And most of them had been, as I said before, neglected or abused as children. They entered adulthood with no employable skills. And those who somehow managed to get a usually a very low paying job were often found themselves on the street after they suffered some often minor reverse that most of us would be able to endure, you know, either the loss of an important relationship or the loss of their job, and bang, they were on the streets. About 40% of the women that I interviewed had been sexually abused in their childhoods. So there's a huge amount of this that predisposed them to homelessness. But I have to say that there were some people I interviewed who clearly had been supported by their families, loved by their families, anything but abuse and neglect, but they developed mental illness, often in their late adolescence or early 20s, and they slipped off into the street, and there was nothing that their families could do to prevent this. So these are some of the individual factors.
It really sounds like you're saying that there are factors at play here that may be outside of an individual person's control, factors that are maybe created by society or the government. Is that true?
You know, it began in the 50s and 60s when state governments deinstitutionalized people. In the United States, state governments dumped 600,000 mentally ill people onto the street with nothing, no support, no housing, no treatment. And to this day, 70 years after this, governments have still failed to create the kind of mental health and substance abuse service system that can help treat these people with serious mental illness and drug abuse. And the result is that 40% of the homeless population has serious and untreated psychiatric disorders. But more fundamentally, and I think people don't really recognize this when they pass someone who's mentally ill and homeless. Fundamentally, the federal government contributed to this problem in a major way, largely by supporting the huge disparities of wealth that exist in this society through our taxation policies, largely. And the result of this is that 10% of the population has amassed a huge amount of wealth, more than 50% of the bottom half of the population combined. And this set the stage for a huge increase in the homeless population. For the people at the very bottom of the income ladder were left with almost nothing. You know, you could put it this way. Government basically stuffed the richest segment of the population, which inevitably meant that it starved the poorest segment. And the homeless population are the true casualties of this huge disparity in wealth. But instead of helping to soften their poverty, the federal government aggravated it further by keeping welfare payments on which these people depend so low as to keep them impoverished forever. Well, you know, when you think about it, you realize that the federal government could have offset the impact of its own policies by creating a robust safety net so that the casualties of these policies wouldn't flow off into the streets with one little financial reverse. But it didn't do this. Instead, in the days of Reagan and subsequently, it slashed the already limited federal support for low-income housing and justified this by promoting a completely phony trickle-down economic theory, which pushed still more people into the streets. I have to say that aggravating the federal contribution to homelessness was the fact that city and state governments enacted policies that diminished the amount of low-income housing. For example, city governments often created incentives that encouraged real estate developers to convert low-cost housing into condominiums that poor people couldn't possibly afford. City governments often gave tax breaks and other incentives to big companies, wooing them to settle within their borders, and then failing to adequately tax them for gobbling up the housing supply with their high-paid employees. And then, you know, we find political leaders wringing their hands about what they created, as though it had just happened by itself as part of the natural order of things. But there's nothing natural about it. It didn't just happen. Governments contributed to creating and maintaining the problem. And if we don't see this, we'll fail to hold them responsible to solve the problem.
That's what can we do about this, Dr. Okun? Where can we possibly, as a society, go from here? How can we make this better?
Well, we need to start by recognizing that these people are not homeless because they want to be. You've got to recognize that most of them are on the street because disadvantages in their childhood and their adulthood have pushed them onto the street, given government policies that have created homelessness in the first place. So the first thing we need to do is really examine our own beliefs about these people, because unless we see them more realistically, unless we see that beyond their rags and their carts and their other stigmata of poverty, that beyond these are people who are much more like us than they are different, and that they have the right to a decent life, not because they have to earn it, but just because they're human and they have rights as human beings.
Dr. Okun, in your experience, what is the most common misconception about mentally ill people on the streets that society holds as fact?
Well, largely, I think society blames people who are homeless, including people who are homeless and mentally ill, for being on the street. You know, there are myths that may be comforting to the public, they're largely untrue. For example, by and large, people are not on the street because they want to be. So the idea that they're there, you know, as an act of their free will is just untrue. And then there's a myth that if people really wanted to get off the street, if they really had the willpower to do so, they would get a job and, you know, make a salary and be able to get off the street. And to people who say to me, well, why don't these people just get a job? I say to them, okay, imagine you're on the street, you're pushing a cart around with all your possessions in it. You're largely dressed in rags. You haven't showered in weeks, so you smell. And you walk into a prospective employer's and you say, can you give me a job? I mean, they would look at you as though you're out of your mind. And even if some rare employer were to be sympathetic and say, okay, I'll try to find a job for you. You know, give me an address where I can contact you. Well, I mean, these people have no address and most of them have no phone. So how is the employer going to get in touch with them? I mean, the whole proposition that they could get a job if they wanted to is just so absurd that it's beyond words.
Of all the people who you met on the street, is there anyone in particular that left a lasting impression? And would you like to share that story here?
Yes. Jeff was a person who left a lasting impression.
Gabe Howard here to tell you about the Inside Bipolar podcast from Healthline Media.
He does the show with me, Dr. Nicole Washington, a board-certified psychiatrist.
That's right. A guy living with bipolar and a psychiatrist team up to discuss living well with bipolar disorder.
Listen now on your favorite podcast player or visit psychcentral.com/IBP to learn more.
Subscribe now so you don't miss out. And we're back with Dr. Robert L. Okun, author of Silent Voices, People with Mental Disorders on the Street.
Jeff was a guy who I met actually in his apartment because he had just gotten off the street. And as a child, he had endured life with a schizophrenic mother who on occasion would take a knife from the kitchen and threaten his father that she would knife him. And Jeff went to bed, you know, terrified that his mother would come in the middle of the night and kill him. Somehow he managed to get through school and got a job as a garbage collector because his dad had been a garbage collector. But there were routine blood tests and urine tests, and some pot was found in his urine, and he was fired. And that began a cascade of events that led him to the street. He became very depressed, could barely get out of bed, and then began to use drugs to try to treat his depression, really. And the result was that he lost all of his money, his apartment, and his fiance, and lived for the next 10 years on the streets, taking drugs and sleeping on heating grates. At one point, he lost all of his teeth, as many people do who have lived on the street for years, because, you know, they have terrible dental care. The grime on the streets often creates infections and abscesses in their mouths, and they lose their teeth. And Jeff told me once that he never smiles because he was so ashamed of his toothless gums that he just didn't want anyone to see them. And he said, though he longed for a romantic relationship, he said there's no way that he would even try to meet a woman because he was so certain that she would be disgusted when she kissed him because he had no teeth. And he said to me once, you know, if you have a big nose, well, no one could blame you. But if you have no teeth, everyone can see that you're a real screw up, because that's the only way that you would have lost your teeth. At some point, his gums became abscessed and the infection traveled to his heart. He was hospitalized for a huge cost to the taxpayer for over 100 days. And during that time, one of the case managers approached him and developed a relationship with him, helped him really begin to think about stopping his drug habit. I guess I'm trying to remember the sequence here, but he ultimately did stop his drugs, but only after he got into an apartment. Well, the end of the story is that he ultimately became employed, and he is now working, living in housing, and is off the street.
I think that's great. I think that is wonderful. I never want, I work very, very hard as a host not to be a distraction. I want to let the topic and guests shine, but just to share with you, I live with bipolar disorder. And listen, the reason that I am not homeless is because of the things that you said. I had a family, right? That's very, very lucky. I had health insurance. That's very lucky. I had money and resources. That's very lucky. I live in a big city and beds were available when I got sick. That's very, very lucky. If you remove those protective factors from me, yeah, and you go back to when I was actively sick, you know, I was delusional. I thought demons were chasing me. You know, and I alienated a lot of people. But thankfully I couldn't alienate my mom. But if I was somebody who was, you know, maybe my parents passed away, maybe I didn't have siblings, maybe I lived in a smaller town with significantly less resources, it's not hard for me to really see a direct link between, you know, serious and persistent mental illness like bipolar disorder with delusions and, you know, plus the mania, et cetera, and seeing myself get arrested. And then, of course, it's much harder to get a job when you've been arrested.
Yes,
if right, nobody is looking out for me and I spend all of my money in a manic phase, I get evicted. Well, now I can't rent another place because I've got an eviction on my record. I can't get a job because I've got a felony on my record. I think that demons are chasing me and they can't find me under the bridge. And before you know it, it's insurmountable alone, especially with a compromised brain. So I related to what you said when you were speaking, just a couple decisions can lead so many people to homelessness. And I really feel like for me, it wasn't even a couple decisions. It was the right people in my life. And I'm super thankful for them, but that means that there are many people who are homeless right now that because they didn't have a mom or a dad, you know, who was in a position to help them, that's why they're homeless. And that just, it's so incredibly unfair. And frankly, it makes me feel very, very guilty and very, very lucky. But I just don't want that for people. And I don't think that any reasonable person should. So I really appreciate your work. Thank you.
What you just said just is so true. That's all I can say. It is so true. And you say it so well.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Oaken. I do try very hard.
You know, Gabe, one of the things that's wonderful about your interviewing is that it's obvious that you really care about this. And it, you know, it makes someone like me feel like he has an ally, you know, because it often feels like one is kind of crying into the wilderness. And it's just great to know that there's an ally somewhere that cares about this problem. But I think you've really gotten to the guts of it.
Well, thank you. Sincerely, doctor, it's such a, some problems can only be resolved by government. And that's, you know, roads cannot be built by
right individuals,
you know, by homeowners, right. Or right, you, right, you know, community members, you need an overarching bridges, you know, Hoover Dam. And I really see homelessness as one of those things that the difference is, you know, people want roads, people want dams, people want hydroelectric power. They certainly want water. They certainly want plumbing. You get to homelessness and I see such a cavalier attitude. They're yeah, like, well, they're lazy and they should get a job and they deserve it. This is a consequence.
Yeah. You know, it really reminds me that this is a problem that touches all of us, not just the homeless. that we as a society are poorer for having this problem. And if we could all wake up and recognize that none of us can escape the trauma of this problem, then we'd be more likely, no matter where we are on the political sides of the spectrum, to push governments into solving it. Because it's not just a problem for people who are homeless. It's also a problem for the whole society.
I like that a lot. And I agree with you for what it's worth. I struggle to enjoy my life knowing that other people in my position have fared significantly worse. But there's also another set of people who they actually celebrate their life. They're like, look, the average person can't overcome this and they become homeless, but I did. And that makes me better, special, et cetera. I'm not in that camp. I'm in the, this actually ruins it, for lack of a better word, or diminishes is a better word. This diminishes my recovery story. It does not amplify it. And I wish more people thought that way.
Yeah, I do too. It's what I was trying to get at when I was talking about American values and the celebration of one's own, really luck, let's face it. The celebration of that as though it came from the fact that they did something special. Well, they did something special because they had the luck of either their DNA or their parents or something, but they didn't just create their success and earn their stake, you know, out of whole cloth. They were lucky. And they don't look at that fact. They don't look at the fact that people who are on the street just didn't have any of the foundational luck that they had.
Exactly. Exactly. And I wish that people would take a more holistic view of their own success and a more holistic view of other people's challenges and or perceived failures. I think that we get a lot further in society if we did so.
Yes, absolutely. And congratulations for what you had to get through to get to where you are. It's really an inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I would love to take all the credit, but I had an awful lot of help along the way.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Hey, nobody's happier about it than my mom. But of course, I am genuinely glad that I did it too. Now, I want to let the listeners know, Dr. Okun, that your book, Silent Voices, People with Mental Disorders on the Street, is available right now. Once again, thank you so much for being here. I personally learned a lot.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Gabe. It means a lot.
You're very welcome. And of course, a great big thank you to all of our listeners. We really loved speaking with Dr. Okun today, but we just couldn't fit everything that he said into a single 30-minute podcast episode. So if you want to learn more and you enjoyed today's episode, just head over to wherever you downloaded this podcast and look for the special bonus episode with Dr. Okun, which is available right now. My name is Gabe Howard, and I'm an award-winning public speaker who could be available for your next event. I also wrote the book Mental Illness is an Asshole and Other Observations, which you can get on Amazon, but you can grab a signed copy with free show swag or learn more about me at my website, GabeHoward.com. Wherever you downloaded this episode, please follow or subscribe to the show. It is 100% free. And hey, can you do me a favor? Recommend the show, because sharing the show is how we're going to grow. I will see everybody next Thursday on Inside Mental Health.
You've been listening to Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast from Healthline Media. Have a topic or guest suggestion? Email us at show@psychcentral.com. Previous episodes can be found at psychcentral.com/show or on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for listening.